Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. If you'd like to find more sessions, interviews, and story podcasts, visit our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. This podcast features a program session from the EDUCAUSE 2010 Annual Conference.
Our speakers are David Lewis, John Rickman, and Roger von Holtzman.
Good afternoon. I'm David Lewis. So I want to start by talking a little bit about why textbooks matter. And textbooks matter because there is a huge amount of money on the table. This is a number from the textbook industry website, which is interestingly called solutionsforstudentsuccess.org. You know, there's $4.7 billion, with a B, dollars on the table. It is the most expensive part of what students have to pay for that they have a choice, and this is why it's important to them. The way that students feel about this is this. This is a report from the Student PIRG Group, which has a really good program on textbook pricing. It's been effective politically. If you want to know the student perspective, you should look at their materials, and this is their fundamental approach on it, Ripoff 101, why the publishers are screwing us. The students are upset, and justifiably so, and they have taken political action, as many of you know. The last authorization of higher education had some micromanagement pieces to universities about how textbooks would be handled. Students have to know, by federal law, what the textbook costs are for their courses when they register. And as I like to say, when the Congress is micromanaging our business, we are in trouble, and this is the case with textbooks. This is an example of why students are upset. This is one of the most popular textbooks in the country. It's by Stephen Lucas. It's the major speech textbook. The list price is around $120, and if you go to half.com and buy the previous edition, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $10. This is an example of what the textbook industry is about. They turn editions over whether they need it or not. This textbook gets revised every 2 years, I assume, because speech is such a fast-moving field and it's tough to keep up with. It's primarily done to kill the used book market, which all of the publishers hate and many of the faculty authors hate because it's cut into their... The Internet it makes the used book market more efficient as it makes the used market for everything. So this means students have more choices. The publishers hate it. It's a real problem. One of the things that's different about textbooks than a lot of other things is that there is a lot of money on the faculty side of this. And in my experience talking to faculty about textbooks over the last year or two, they don't want to talk about this. If you were in a room this size and asked a group of faculty to raise their hand and volunteer how much money they made selling their textbooks, there would be no hands. They really don't want to talk about it. My view is that a typical textbook author, outside of the few that make huge amounts of money, makes somewhere between 2 weeks in the south of France and a BMW a year. It's a lot of money at stake, and the money has to be on the table to get faculty to produce this kind of material. We talk about open textbook content. There are some faculty who will invest the time and energy to do this and then give it away, but we're going to have to pay to make this happen, even if we're going to pay for open content. I would conclude this piece of this by talking about some issues that I think are important. And the first is print versus digital. And I think that we're in an environment where this difference will become significantly less important. Print on demand is pretty much the way a lot of things get distributed. There are a number of people, Connections, which does open textbook material, and an interesting company called Flat World Knowledge, which do print on demand for lots of things and can produce a book somewhere between $20 and $30 for just the paper costs. The more important question, I think, has to do with economic models, whether we're dealing with open or proprietary content. Who pays for it, I think, is a critical issue, whether the students continue to pay in a retail model or whether the universities step in and find a way to bring our buying power to bear in a way that's very different from having our students buy material. And then I think there's some interesting issues around whether or not the material is sold on an item-by-item basis or whether we move into an environment that's more of a site-licensed-based piece. So I would invite all of you to go down to the Pearson's booth and ask them what the site license for all their content is for your campus on a per-student basis, and then maybe they'll start to think that it's a movement and they need to consider that pricing. You'll enjoy the response, especially if you get to senior people about that question. It'll be a fun experience for you. So the other thing I would say about this, the world is clearly changing very radically. Anybody who looks at it for more than a very brief period of time recognizes that this is ripe for disruption. The economic models of the traditional publishers are failing pretty quickly. It's a lot like the music industry. No one is clear what's going to happen, and no one is really prepared to provide good product at this point. So we know it's going to get disrupted, and we need some people to experiment. And the people who have been doing that probably more than anyone else are my colleagues from Northwest Missouri, so I'm going to turn it over to them now.
We really have a tough environment to implement e-textbooks because we have to move the university. It's not done one student at a time in the bookstore. In other words, the university's providing them. We have to purchase them. Then they pick them up, and we pretty much need to go as a group, and the instructors, professors have to be in tune with the program and in tune with the resources that are being provided to the students. Talk about a tough model. Our students spend $6 per credit hour for their textbook rental. Figures out to about $180. That would be per year. Talked about earlier the publishers disliking the used textbook market. They hate the textbook rental market. And since we've been talking about this so much in the last couple of years, I think you've probably seen as many articles about starting of textbook rentals by bookstores and other entities than we've ever had. It's really kind of a hot topic now to rent textbooks. Our other service at Northwest is that we provide one-to-one laptop for all of our students. We really thought that we were in a good environment to go more and more electronic, as we've had a long commitment to it. And we also wanted to complete our digital learning environment. We felt like we had most of that arch completed except that top keystone. And I think that was kind of a challenge to us, that we should complete the arch and complete our digital learning environment. It's been a tough one. All of our efforts so far have not really produced a lot of courses changing to e-textbooks or e-content at this time. We've had a lot of interest and a lot of work put into it. One time we had 200, another 500. Then at one time we had e-textbooks available to almost, I think it looked like maybe 4,000 or 5,000 of our students. There was a book available if they wanted to take advantage of that. Later goal, and this actually came after maybe the first year, is we really wanted to get into the paper reduction and try to have a more sustainable campus and reduce the amount of paper. Somebody calculated it took, and I forget the exact number, but it was hundreds of trees per year in just the textbooks that we buy, and maybe we could do better than that. Our pilot projects included three phases, and the first phase was the use of Sony readers and e-textbooks for them. Then our second phase was the use of notebook computers. That was basically the next semester. Since everybody had a notebook, it seemed reasonable that was a valid experiment. And then three, that phase was the full integration of textbooks with other electronic learning resources. Boy, we had a lot of interest right off the bat. The president had his Kindle, and we thought that the reader would be the driver for this all to happen. And it still may be. There's arguments both ways, that the content is going to drive the reader, and some are arguing yet that the reader is going to drive the content. But anyway, we had 50 faculty members eager to try this in their classrooms. And Sony readers were selected mainly because Kindle was contacted, and I don't know who they were wanting to work with, but they really weren't interested in working with us. So we went with the next one that looked like a good general purpose e-textbook reader, and that was Sony. Some of the findings that we had from that first semester, and some of them came real fast. We're talking about discovering some of this within weeks or days after a student started using the Sonys. Number one, they really did like the e-ink, that the e-ink was more readable. They could read it longer and without eye strain. The features, the low power consumption, that the battery life was plenty long, that was not an issue. But we found out that PDF formatted textbooks are restrictive and slow in navigation, especially those early readers. And that was a downfall. Students pretty quickly said that I'd rather have paper than this PDF. If it's got to be a PDF, let's get out of this. That was fairly quick. It lacked keyword searching and annotation. They found that to be very important. And there was no interactivity possible with online resources. There wasn't the possibility of links to video or links to more information about a particular topic or to drill down for other electronic resources. The black and white only was restrictive. If it wasn't just text or pretty bland pictures, that color was not needed or didn't have a graph that needed color. So that was a problem. No flash animation or a video. Students still wanted something small. They had a high affinity for small handheld devices. They started talking almost immediately about, well, I could almost do this with my iPhone or my smartphone or whatever. And so that was still going on. They liked the idea of not carrying all the books in their backpack. They had a lot of nice comments about that. But the enthusiasm quickly did leave the e-readers. And we could see a lot earlier than we expected that this wasn't worth a second semester of effort, and that those 200 Sonys were probably going to go in the closet, and that's just about what happened. They found that the e-readers were attention getters, but were not attention keepers, and that they were probably not going to be the driver to move our campus to an e-textbook campus. They did find that they liked the e-readers for pleasure reading, if it was front-to-back reading, without searching, going back and forth, without needing to drill down, that it was very convenient for pleasure reading. The readers are, in most cases yet today, everything that's come out, one of the common problems are that they are designed for reading and not input. A student is going to have to, with most e-reading devices, they're going to have a computer and an e-reader. And if they have a notebook, they're going to be carrying around two things instead of one thing. And we were reminded of that. Most e-readers, iPads, whatever, they're not designed for input or creativity. They're not made for students to write term papers or to create PowerPoints or to create spreadsheets. They're made to look at things and to browse the web. And so there's still a popularity for them, but they are readers and not a tool for creation. And, of course, in higher education, if we're not teaching our students to be creative and creating content in their homework assignments or so on, we've pretty much missed the boat, in my opinion. I think that's kind of wraps up phase one. We'll head into the next phase.
Let me apologize first about the slideshow. It looks great on here, and it's okay for the webcast, but it doesn't show up here. We're not interfacing very well with the projector, but we'll definitely give you the content. excuse me. My name is Roger Von Holzen, and I'm the director of our faculty technology office at Northwest Missouri State University, but also, as of July 1st, I'm the director of textbook services. So it's like weird situation, combination of hats I'm going to be wearing. I think with the idea of actually moving us more directly into the realm of e-textbooks. As John said about the Sonys didn't work, but they actually, a lot of people on campus like them now for just pleasure reading, actually, so that's what they're primarily being used for. But what I want to talk about now is our second phase about using the notebook computer. Since we already have the notebook computers for all the students, it seemed, you know, and it's like, why didn't we do this in the first place? Well, our president, you know, as John said, got the idea of using going to e-textbooks with respect to the Kindle. Well, that didn't work, obviously. So we thought, well, let's move on to the notebook computer since we already have them. It was easy to get the notebook, the e-textbooks downloaded on the students' computers. We end up going with a company called VitalSource. And VitalSource is a bunch of publishers have gotten together, and they work through VitalSource. And we wanted a common platform. And so this gave us a standard for the textbooks. We put it on the load set for the students, so it was easy to do that. And they could download the files to their computer itself. Now, if you've never seen VitalSource bookshelf, on the left you have your index. These are hot links. I mean, they're links to the figures. They can drop into examples. And this is on their computer. So it works pretty well for that. You can also highlight and take note, then put notes in there. And so you can insert notes such as that. And as you're doing it, you're getting a summary over here. So that's very handy. Now, what I found is one of the best features of this software is the next part, that you can take it and get a summary page of your notes and your highlights and put it into Word and print it out. Now, this to me would have been great as a student for studying for a final exam or something like that. You don't have to go through the book. You've got all your notes, everything right in one location. To me, it's faster and easier to do that. So that was one of the nice features of this, having that software. Unfortunately, the students didn't use that feature as often as we thought they should have. Well, some of the findings. Well, they did. It was simple to deliver the textbooks to the notebook computer. It was a very efficient process for us to do that on campus. The students could do it pretty much by themselves, or if they needed a little help from the support staff. The platform was nice, and to have those common features across the various publishers, because that's part of the issue you run into is if you're running individual publishers, you're also having different platforms that you're dealing with, and so that can be confusing with students across if they have multiple e-textbooks. But in the end of it, you know, the notebooks work better, but the students still preferred to use printed textbooks. That was their preference. So we found that the e-textbook just was not something that most of our students wanted to try. Well, then we thought, okay, let's move on to another phase, and this is where we currently are. This is kind of the state of the situation right now. When they talk about e-textbooks, any of the publishers, they're basically talking to you about PDFs. Okay, we found out from our experience with our students, they generally do not like PDFs. To me, a PDF, you know, a textbook is a wonderful piece of technology. It's been around for hundreds of years. It's very effective. And all of a sudden, you're going to give them a PDF. That's a step down from a textbook. You're not giving them anything new, a benefit. Why should we take this? We want to move it up a step, not down a step. So the PDF is a step down, to be honest with you. Now, you can go to various CourseSmart is one thing. They have a bunch of PDF files, and they call them their e-textbooks. They'll give it to you for 50 to 60% off, but then you're limited to 180 days on that. That is another issue a lot of people have about the limitation on the access to your e-textbooks. Some people want to have them for a lifetime. People hold on to books. You know, some of you might have books that from your undergraduate time you still have on the shelves. So a lot of people want to hold on to that. Flat World Knowledge. The concept is good, but they only have 29 books, and most of them are in business. So there's one math course, a book that they have. And I think given time, they may move in the realm where you have more options for the books. But they are PDF or they are HTML and with links to external resources, but not within the content. So they have other resources, so not in that. There's also Sage e-textbooks. They are PDFs. They have links to external videos embedded within the content, but most of that tends to be out to YouTube. And I don't know how long a lot of those links will work after a period of time, so that'd be a little bit of concern. Then you have OER Commons, very limited content, very few textbooks, and again, it's PDF format. So again, a lot of it's PDF. What our goal here for us at Northwest is we've been providing faculty with guidelines, and basically trying to say, if you're looking at an e-textbook, we don't want you to look at a PDF. We want to look at something longer, better than that. We want something that can be integrated with other content, that has, it's a full-fledged. We want to step up. If you aren't going to get a step up, then we'll just stick with the book. You know? So we're pushing for integrated supplemental materials. We want everything in it together. We want a whole package. And we want it cheaper. Now, part of our problems, and that's part of my problem, is textbook services. I cannot get any of the publishers to sell me an e-textbook for $18. For a semester, because that's what we charge our students, and that's what they pay for our books, and you know, and so that's my price line, and so far I haven't quite gotten that negotiation to work. So, what now? I do have an example. If you want to see what we're thinking of as an e-textbook that's really fully integrated, going back to Bob Pearson, Pearson has something called My Math Lab. My Math Lab is probably the best example of a fully integrated e-textbook. Now, this is within their course management system, but I'm sure this is e-college, but I'm sure they can do it with Blackboard and Angel or whatever, you know, format LMS that you may be using. But you have in there, you have video, you have multimedia sections, you have the textbook, and you have tutorials. That's all there for the students. An example here, you can try it. You can have to have students try it. There's a video that they can watch within the whole text, so that if it's more or less just in time access to the information. You don't want to necessarily have to get out of the book and go and click on a different, you know, go to a supplemental material and click on links there, and then go back to the book. I want it right there. I want it all part of that. I want to have it. Actually, the other part, I think, you also, if you have a little quiz, I want the quiz in there, and it goes into the gradebook. So I want it all integrated into the whole thing. That is what we're primarily looking for, at least at this point in time. That's our ideal for an e-textbook. Moving forward, we still have the challenges, like I said, about the pricing. We've calculated, we save our students on campus with our textbook rental service, between $2.5 and $4.5 million a year. And, you know, $2.5 million is if basically they got used books, if they purchased used books. So, you know, and so that's quite a lot of savings to that. We keep on looking for a delivery platform, something that's going to work. You know, the e-reader option, it was something. I don't know if many of you have heard of the Entourage Edge. If you didn't hear of it, it came out the Tuesday before the iPad came out that Friday. It's called Bad Market Timing, okay? If you want to take a look at it, on one side it's an e-reader, on the other side it's a computer. It's Linux-based. It has a lot of potential, but I think market-wise they've got a challenge. You know? So you got that. The iPad, what's its impact? It's hard to tell, but I keep on reminding people. I said, look at smartphones. Until the iPhone came out, and then a year later, the apps for the iPhone, the App Store came out. Look at how much that, and that's only been 3 years, how much that whole market has changed. Well, give us 3 years, and let's see what happens with the market with respect to the whole tablet or the slate or the pad or the computing and what the technology will afford us. Once that happens, I think then you're going to see the potential of really seeing an integrated e-textbook. The notebook computer is fine. It works. But it's clunky. It's not convenient. I don't know if you want to sit on your dorm bed with that on your lap trying to read and highlight your notes for hours. An iPad-type device would work a lot better. And that's what we're waiting for. Right now, the technology is not there. It's still not quite there for what you need. And even though Apple says that they have e-textbooks, I talked to one of the reps, and I talked to the one technical person. And there's like about 5 books basically out there. So there's not much there for them. But I think you're going to see a lot of changes with the technology coming down in the next couple of years. So.
I want to talk briefly about a study that we did at Indiana University last spring. It was the spring semester of 2010. The system that we used was through a company, a small Indiana-based company called CourseLoad, which, like the system that our colleagues use here, is an aggregator of content. They've got contracts with most of the major publishers, and their model is that the price is somewhere between 60 and 70% reduction on the list price, but all students are required to pay. So students don't have a choice, and so it eliminates the used market, and they're happy. They've negotiated arrangements that are much better than Course Smart, which is the 180-day loan. It's got life. If as long as you're a student at IU, you've got access, and their printing arrangements are better than some of the other online publisher-based systems. It's a browser-based system, which allows for note-taking and annotation. And one of the features that it has that's fairly interesting is that the notes can be shared across either from the faculty member to the students or between students. When we queried students about this, 41% primarily read from printed text. So even though the system was online, they would print it out, and 41% primarily used the paper. Students who primarily read on the computer still printed out about 14% of the book, and we could see this based on the usage figures from the system. So this wasn't self-reported stuff, this was system-driven stats. And students who reported they primarily read on paper read about 30% of the book online. And it appeared to us, looking at the numbers, that over the course of the semester, students tended to migrate to using the computer-based system rather than the paper. Now, one of the things that you need to remember is that the majority of these students were information technology students in the business school. So they were reasonably sophisticated users of technology. And ease of use, downloads, printing were not, the logistical pieces of it were not problematic. Students claimed that they read and annotated more than they would have if they used in the computer version than they would have in the printed text, although it's hard to know whether that's credible or not. Students particularly liked, and this would be no particular surprise, when the faculty member took the time to annotate the text and then shared that with the class. And that was fairly powerful in terms of the way that the faculty could use the textbook. And the most important factor for the students was the fact of the reduction in cost. This was the thing that they said would drive them to use the technology rather than the printed book, was the fact that it was significantly cheaper. We did look at the academic performance of students and correlated this to some extent with the use of the textbooks. Not surprisingly, students who did not use the text one way or the other did not have as high grades. This was useful to know, I guess, that the textbook actually mattered somewhat. There was a correlation between students who did annotation and note-taking, and they tended to have slightly higher grades. But it didn't matter whether the students shared their results or whether or not, when you looked at their notes or their annotations, whether or not it was a very deep, you know, whether the note had much content didn't seem to matter. Simply the fact that they took notes seemed to be indicative of things, or of a higher performance. I don't think we saw a difference there. The question had to do with whether there was higher grade performance based on whether they primarily read print or whether they primarily read from the computer. So I don't have that piece of the study in front of me. My recollection is that there was not a significant difference. One of the other things we found is that for students, the notion of not using paper is important to them. And also, one of the downsides that the students recognize is that using a textbook on a computer puts you in a distracting environment. If you're reading your textbook, it's not calling you to Facebook, if it's a printed textbook. But if it's on your machine, that little voice that says, check on your friends, is always there, so it's a much more distracting environment. Faculty, a couple of them actually tried to think about how to use this more effectively, but by and large, faculty are not yet really thinking about what can happen in the different environment. My sense is that it's a fairly reflexive thing with faculty. They use the textbook they use, and it's not something they think about critically at this stage. Maybe the e-text thing will make them do that. Finally, what I want to say is, as we look at Indiana University about the future and what's important going forward, there are two things that we believe fundamentally are absolutely essential. The first is that open content is important, and it's important to support it in whatever ways we can. There are some good open content sites. We work with Connections in a lot of ways, but it's still not deep or rich enough, and ways of encouraging faculty to contribute open content is important. I think it's important not because the publishers will go away. The analogy that I would use is with the genetic sequencing of the human genome. It was important that there was not simply a private company doing that, but that there was a publicly funded alternative, and at the end of the day, they came together. But if there hadn't been the open content, who knows what that would be? We would be subject to just the private thing. And I think it's also, that's why open content is important in textbooks. Not because the big publishers are going to go away, but we need to have an alternative. The other thing that we believe fundamentally is that we need to change the underlying economic model from a retail model to a business-to-business model. Our students have no market power when they confront the publishers. And until they do, until we intervene, where we actually have some market power as institutions, we don't think that the underlying price structures are going to be changed. And we think that that's fundamentally one of the most important things that we need to do.
You can find more EDUCAUSE podcasts by visiting our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. EDUCAUSE podcasts are now available to listen to straight from your mobile device. Just visit www.educause.edu/mobile. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.